Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Gopi Jana Vanava Girivara Dhani Yashoda Nandana Vrajana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanasari Tira Vanasari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjani Hari Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Hari Yashoda Nandana Vrajana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanasari Jaya Om Vishnupala Paramahamsa Parivrayaka Acharya Stutara Sata Sri Simad His Divine Grace Sila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Is Gaum Founder Acharya His Divine Grace Sila Prabhupada Ki Is Gaum Bhimati Founder Acharya Prabhupada Ki Gantarashima Bhagavatam Ki Gaura Premanandi All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gurudev. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयानुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेषु अभाद्रेषु नित्यं भागवता सेवा भगवती तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवती नैष्ठिकी Written from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, Chapter 4, entitled The Atrocities of King Kamsa, Text 22. Yavadatasmi hastami ti atmanam manjate sadrik tavatadabhimanyanya यवाद्वतोऽस्मि हन्तस्मि ति आत्मनो मन्यते स्वदृक् तवत् तदभिमान्याज्ञो बध्यापधाकतानि यत् यवाद्वतोऽस्मि हन्तस्मि ति आत्मनो मन्यते स्वदृक् तवत्तदभिमान्याज्ञो बध्यापधाकतानि यत् यवाद्वतोऽस्मि हन्तास्मि त्यात्मनान्मन्यते सुदृक् Ladies. Yavadvatasmi hantasmi Yatmanam manjate svadrik Tavattadavi manyanyo Vajyapadhakataniyat Yavat, as long as Hata Asmi, I am now being killed by others. Hasta Asmi, Hanta Asmi, I am the killer of others. Iti, thus, Atmanam, own self, Manyate, he considers. Asvadrik, one who has not seen himself because of the darkness of the bodily conception of life. Tabat, for that long, tad abhimani, regarding himself as the killed or the killer. Agya, a foolish person. Vadhya, vadha, Katam, the worldly transaction of being obliged to execute some responsibility. Iyat continues. Translation in purport, Vaisala Prabhupada. In the bodily conception of life, one remains in darkness without self-realization, thinking, I am being killed, or I had kill my enemies. As long as a foolish person thus considers the self to be the killer or the killed, he continues to be responsible for material obligations. and consequently he suffers the reactions of happiness and distress. Let's repeat, in the bodily conception of life, one remains in darkness without self-realization. Thinking, I am being killed. Or I have killed my enemies. As long as a foolish person thus considers the self to be the killer or the killed, he continues to be responsible for material obligations. And consequently, he suffered the reactions of happiness and distress. By the grace of the Lord, Kamsa felt sincere regret for having unnecessarily persecuted such Vaishnavas as Devaki and Vasudeva, and thus he came to the transcendental stage of knowledge. Quote, because I am situated on the platform of knowledge, unquote, Kamsa said, understanding that I am not at all the killer of your sons, I have no responsibility for their death. As long as I thought that I would be killed by your son, I was in ignorance, but now I'm free from this ignorance, which was due to a bodily conception of life, unquote. As is stated in the Bhagavad Gita 18:17, yasya nahaṁ krito bhāvo buddhir yasya nalipyate hato api sa ima lokam nahaṁ tina nivādhyate. One who is not motivated by false ego, whose intelligence is not entangled, though he kills men in this world, is not the slayer, nor is he bound by his actions. According to this axiomatic truth, Kamsa pleaded that he was not responsible for having killed the sons of Devaki and Vasudeva. Please try to excuse me for such a false external activity, he said, and be pacified with this same knowledge. Oma Gyanati Mirundasya Gyananirana Svalakaya Shakshuru Militanjena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Panchakalpa Tarvis Chakripa Sindhu Vyayiva Chakati Tanam Pavana Vyo Vaishnava Vyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Siva Sari Gaura Bhakta Arunya Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So this is the continuation of Kamsa's plea for wanting to be off the hook. This chapter is properly entitled The Atrocities of King Kamsa because not only was Kamsa persecuting Vaishnavas and persecuting Krishna's own mother, in Krishna's own father, but actually he killed Krishna's own brothers, meaning the sons of Vasudeva and Devaki. So that's the atrocity. And somebody who might impartially read the continuation of the story might think that this is the worst case of child abuse, because you know, here is a powerful king, pretty much an emperor, because he had many vassals. He had many other powerful kings under his sway. And so here is this man with all this power, with all this material supremacy. He had no humanity for these acts, because he was able to just get the babies as soon as they were born, and he was killing them one after another. So this is the worst, probably one of the worst child abuse case. I mean, there are other cases of child abuse. We've been talking about in the previous verses and previous classes how the abortion issue is also a child abuse. This is probably the second worst. And there are many other cases of child abuse. We're all familiar with that. So, the interesting thing is that Prabhupada is beginning his purport by saying that by the grace of Krishna, Kamsa felt sincere regret. This is kind of astonishing that Krishna could bless such a scoundrel as Kamsa. I mean, Prabhupada is saying right here, by the grace of Krishna, Kamsa felt some sincere regret. And this puts us into a frame of mind in which we should understand that no matter how fallen, no matter how nefarious, no matter how sinful a person may become or a person is, in ultimate analysis, in the eyes of Krishna, such a person is still a jiva, a soul, a transcendental living entity. And we can also understand that even to such degraded people, Krishna is supplying intelligence, Krishna is supplying, is giving this impetus for feeling regret. Oftentimes we think that, you know, when a friend or another fellow devotee or someone else commits a major blunder in their lives, you know, we get into the bandwagon and start blaming that person. We see this oftentimes in human affairs, you know, when somebody commits a huge mistake and the community begins to, some people in the community begins to blast that person and, you know, make him feel bad, worse than he feels already. But we should understand that Krishna is not like that. Because Krishna sees in a different way than we see. Oftentimes, it is a psychological fact that out of insecurity, we tend to condemn people for their mistakes. Because then we feel that because we didn't do that mistake, we must be somehow superior to that person. That's the psychology. And this doesn't happen not only among religious people, religionists, but also even among the secular people. When they see somebody failing, people around them, they feel like, you know, they feel this kind of, wow, at least it's not me. You know, and better you than me, they say, right? But Krishna doesn't see things like that. Krishna, because he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead and he sees the transcendental status of the living entity, Krishna is able to recall his relationship with these living entities, even though it's so fallen. Krishna is able to inspire these people. So, this is one way of understanding this statement by Prabhupada, by saying that by the grace of Krishna comes a felt sincere regrets for having unnecessarily persecuted the Vaishnavas instead of King Vasudeva. So this is one moral of the story going on here that we should understand. Another point in the story is that somebody might say that Kamsa was misusing the scriptures to justify his sinful activities. It's like we've been talking with some of the devotees here that, you know, it's like if I commit a heinous mistake myself, let's say if I go around, I do have nephews, if I go around and killing my nephews and then I go to my, you know, my brother and I say, hey, you know, it's not me really, I mean, it's the devil made me do it. That's what people say, isn't it? That wouldn't cut it. That would not be a justification, not even an explanation. And even when I get arrested for having killed my nephews, and I tell the judge that it wasn't me who did it, it's just nature, you know, that's their karma. It is their karma to be killed that way, and I just carry it on. That wouldn't cut it either. I will end up in jail. But in the case of Kamsa, because he was the supreme emperor, he was the supreme authority, political authority, he's the one who basically had all the power of interpreting the law, making the law, and executing the law. So he, because of such a responsibility that he had, killing these babies was such a heinous act, because he is the one who supposedly would have provided protection for these babies. And instead, he killed them mercilessly like that. Now, it's interesting that Prabhupada also quotes Bhagavad Gita 18:17, in which Krishna says that, well, if he's not motivated by false ego, whose intelligence is not entangled, though he kills men in this world, he's not a slayer. We should understand that there is a distinction between Kamsa's killing and Arjuna's killing, because Krishna is talking here this verse in the context of Arjuna. Arjuna is engaged in killing as well as Kamsa. But unlike Kamsa, Krishna is actually directing Arjuna face to face, telling him what to do in the battle. Whereas in the case of Kamsa, Krishna, even though Krishna is sanctioning, this is the spirit in which Prabhupada explains his purport here, even though Krishna is sanctioning the killing of these babies by Kamsa, Krishna is not instructing Kamsa to do it, because that is not under the religious principles of a kshatriya to do so. So there is, and then Prabhupada uses this interesting word. He said, according to this axiomatic truth, Kamsa pleaded that he was not responsible for killing these babies. Now this is very interesting, because axiomatic, what it really means is that the instruction is there in the scriptures, that the soul is different than the body, that the soul cannot be killed, so therefore, when a person is killing someone else, that's not really happening. There is no slayer, and there is no slain or slayer. Nobody's dying, nobody's killing, in the ultimate analysis. This is what is axiomatic about it. But from this perspective of relevant dealings, there is a difference. If you kill someone, you will be punished. Even though metaphysically, even though on the platform of transcendental knowledge, we know you're not killing, but you are entangled in a karmic reaction with this other living entity, that you are impelled to kill that person. And that person is being impelled by his karma to be killed by you. That's also known. Technically that's known, but that doesn't leave you off the hook if you commit murder or if you kill someone. Unless it's a self-defense, of course, but if you kill someone else, the state will come with everything they have upon you, and you will be executed, you will be punished, whatever it may be. So this brings it to another level of understanding, that transcendentalists, we are always acting in two levels. We are acting in the transcendental level, and we enter in the so-called material level, we would use the word secular level. One is called, in Sanskrit, I believe it's called paramartika level, and you have a harika level. In other words, you have certain designations according to the body that we have. That's if you have a harika level, in which you have a certain name, a legal name, some ID, a certain type of body, a female body, a male body, old body, new body, a young body. So we have all these designations, but on the paramartika level, we understand that we are not these bodies. And this is what seems to be the issue here. The Kamsa may be perceived as misusing the scriptures by saying, listen, it's already known in the scriptures that I'm not a killer, and your kids are not killed anyway, so they just change the bodies. So we should be careful not to imitate this kind of thinking. Oftentimes we hear that we shouldn't imitate the pure devotees, but we also should not imitate the demons, like Kamsa, saying that, misusing the scriptures, abusing the scriptures for our own purposes. So this is another important lesson that we should understand here, that in fact, if you do a little bit of history of the religious experience of mankind, of human society, you will see that what triggers atheism in the modern times, what has triggered atheism in the modern times, is the abuse of the scriptures by religious people. It's not really much that people hate God. It didn't start like that, at least not in the modern times. It's not. We're not talking about the Kamsa's cases or the Hiranyakashipu cases these days. People nowadays are atheists because they see the severe abuse that so-called religious leaders have done with their scriptures. So, in this line of thinking, the devotees of Krishna, the devotees in the Krishna consciousness movement, we should be very careful not to follow in the footsteps of Kamsa here, saying that, you know, you can commit some sinful activity and start thinking against somebody else, and start thinking that, you know, I'm just the agent of karma here, I'm the agent of Durga here, and I'm just doing this because for whatever reason. So that should be understood. Now, the another interesting point here is that even though Prabhupada is explaining that this is probably Kamsa is off the hook, meaning that that Kamsa did not have any say in the matter. But we can understand, if we read the whole story, is that Kamsa was fearful for his life. In other words, the killing of Kamsa, the quality of killing of Kamsa, is because he was trying to protect himself from the imminent death, that he was foretold that he was going to be killed by the son of Devaki, the eighth child of Devaki. So Kamsa, in his psychology, he was thinking, you know, I have to do this because the first and foremost action of a human being is to protect himself. And here I am, the demigods are saying that this kid, the eighth child, is going to kill me, so I might as well kill him. I mean, what would you do? Let's say, you know, somebody's going to kill you. You have certain evidence that someone is going to kill you. So the normal thing to do for self-preservation is that you got to kill him first, right? I mean, that's known. And even in the law, if you kill someone else for self-defense, you're exempted from punishment. So in a certain way, it comes to thinking, you know, wow, you know, here's the demigods are saying I'm going to be killed by my sister's child, so I might as well defend myself. But that's impaired by false ego. We also have the same story in Bhagavatam, but with a different twist. The story of Chitraketu Maharaj and Indra. Chitraketu Maharaj knew that Indra was going to kill him. But Chitraketu Maharaj's psychology, his transcendental realization, was so much higher than Kamsa, that he, even though he was engaged in a fighting with Indra, he knew the transcendental status of the whole transaction. He knew that upon leaving his body, he was going to be going back home, back to Godhead. So he was also foretold that he was going to be killed by Indra. At the same time, he would have come to his a different reaction to it, a different perspective of things. So, what is the issue of responsibility? What is the issue of accountability? If the material modes of nature are impelling people to do all kinds of things, eating all kinds of stuff, having all kinds of thoughts, taking certain type of activities, certain type of entertainments. I mean, we know that from the Bhagavad Gita. From the Bhagavad Gita, we understand that people have different predilections on the basis of the material modes of nature in which they are absorbed in. And Krishna explains the type of food, the type of entertainment, the type of things you like or dislike, it's all based on the modes of nature. So where is the question of free will? Where am I in the picture to say, because I mean after all, Kamsa could have said, no, I don't want to kill these kids. Even though I'm hearing this omen, I'm hearing this voice from heaven, that I'm going to be killed by the eighth child of Devaki, well, that may be true, but I'm not going to kill them. He could have thought like that. That is called free will. That he took the option of actually killing the kids. That's also an exercise of free will. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is explained that activities are not only carried out by the doer himself or herself. Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita that there are many other factors involved. There are five factors, I believe, and one of them is the super soul. The super soul gets involved. Prabhupada calls it the ultimate sanctioner, the person who ultimately sanctions certain activities. Impelled by the modes of nature, impelled by our own desires, impelled by their own deeply rooted understanding of the arising of the false ego, we act in certain ways, we think in certain ways. Even this is happening even among those who are transcendentalists. That's why you have different kinds of transcendentalists. You have the karmis, the yogis, the impersonalists, the mayavadis, you got the devotees, and even among the devotees you have the neophyte devotees, Madhyamadhikara devotees, Uttamadhikara devotees. It's all based on this. How much are we under the sway of false ego? Under the sway of false ego, for example, a neophyte devotee cannot understand very well the position of the Uttamadhikaris or the Madhyamadhikaris, because that devotee is still under the sway of false ego. And he thinks that God is only in the temples, like Prabhupada said. He thinks that Krishna is only in the temples, or God is only in the mosque or in the churches. He's unable to see the presence of God everywhere. But as one is free from the false ego, as we experience that freedom, then we start seeing the presence of God pretty much everywhere. Not just in the temple. And when we completely give up the grip of the false ego, then we see the true ego, which is certain. We are eternal servants of Krishna. This is another thing that Kamsa could not understand. Even though Kamsa is talking great philosophy here, you're not the body, I'm not the body, your kids were not, you know, not related to their bodies. I mean, this is very much Bhagavad Gita philosophy. But he failed to understand that even though we are jivas, eternally existent jivas, he failed to understand that these jivas have an eternal relationship with Krishna. See, in understanding the self, in understanding the soul, there are kind of three parts. First is what Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita as the negations of what the soul is not. Many people think that Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita only say that what the soul is not. It cannot be killed, it cannot be dried, it cannot be withered by the wind, it cannot be moistened by water. But then actually that's one third of the understanding. Another third of the understanding of the soul is that we are eternally existent, that we are above and beyond the modes of nature. And the third, where the complete picture of the soul is the third issue here, is that there is an eternal connection to the Supreme Lord. And that's what pretty much towards the end of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna begins to reveal. That it's not only that you're not the body, it's not only that you're not a karmi or you're not a yogi, but actually you have an eternal relationship with me, that's what Krishna said. So even though Kamsa was able to understand the transcendental position of the soul, he failed to understand that the soul has an eternal connection with God, with Krishna. because after all he was trying to kill Krishna. So we should understand that even though a person may have understanding based on the Vedas, on Vedanta, based on the Vedic knowledge, that is not sufficient to be a devotee of Krishna. Actually, it's explained by Lord Brahma too. Adaitam shuttana naginananta rupam adam purana purusho namajo vanamcha vileshu dunlavam adunlavam adubhakto. A person can go through all the Vedas, understanding all the intricacies of the four Vedas, but Lord Brahma is saying that's not enough. Vileshu dunlavam adunlavam adubhakto. So the ingredient that's going to bring us from being a scholar in the Vedic knowledge to actually a devotee of Krishna is that mercy of Krishna, that's love for Krishna. And that's what Kamsadeva didn't have, even though he was talking big philosophy. In the eyes of an ordinary person, Kamsadeva is a major philosopher, but he's not a devotee. So this is another thing we should understand. Oftentimes we think that when we display our knowledge, when we can make reference to so many scriptures, that that's enough in our advancement in Krishna consciousness. But actually our advancement in Krishna consciousness is something we can measure our own selves, especially our own selves. In the association of devotees, we are able to understand whether we are advancing or not. And that is the major, that is the real benefit that we get from the association of devotees. But the person who can really tell whether you're advancing or not is yourself. Only you can tell. Because we can put up a show in front of others and appear to be advanced and deceive people to some in some way. I mean, there are cases of those. But, I mean, how? It's a matter of conscience, isn't it? It's a matter of conscience. I mean, how really are we interested in Krishna consciousness? How are we really interested personally at our own private level? How are we really involved in making this Krishna consciousness movement flourish in this world? Because in reality, the whole key of advancing in Krishna consciousness in this part of the world is really to be involved in the mission of the great acharyas, Srila Prabhupada. It's really by preaching what Prabhupada preached that Krishna delivers the mercy to the preachers of Krishna consciousness. And even if you have nobody to preach to, you can preach to yourself. I mean, even that is great. I mean, it happened to me sometimes in the past when I had to work in certain ways, certain schedules, I was preaching to myself. I mean, I saw the need to talk about Krishna, and you just, even when you're alone, you can do this exercise. So it's really, it requires a great level of introspection. This is what Kamsat lacked quite a bit. Even though he was heading by the impetus of Krishna, as Prabhupada explains it, by the mercy of Krishna, he was feeling this regret. That was conscience. This guy thought, you know, this is horrible I'm doing. You know, this is like killing babies. I mean, I'm a king, for crying out loud. I'm a king, I'm a great king. How am I killing these helpless newborns? I mean, he felt that regret. But he failed to see this connection with, he was participating in the Krishna Leela, and he could not see himself related eternally to Krishna. He just thought of Krishna as an enemy. So I'm going to stop here. Any questions on this point I have raised? Yes, Rahul?
Sometimes when we're in Krishna consciousness, we also have to do things, and there's those verses that if you do in Krishna consciousness in surrender, then you're not ultimately responsible to anyone, the forefathers, to the because and Arjuna, he engaged in killing so many people, but he wasn't responsible. So sometimes it actually is a fact, isn't it, that you can do all kinds of things like that. Look how many people got killed in the battle, etc. Of course, Yudhisthira was upset about that, but I mean, were they responsible? So, and also devotees in the beginning years, I don't know how much right now, but still, they would also think that I'm doing this, I'm surrendered, I'm not responsible either. Yeah. In fact, that the same lines that are being used by Kamsa, you said, don't imitate him. Yeah. But we're saying that we go one step further, that I'm surrendered, so I don't have a I'm not ultimately responsible. So how do you clarify that distinction that's been misused?
Well, the answer is really in the Bhagavad Gita. Because, as Prabhupada quotes here, very appropriately, Prabhupada is making a comparison between the Kilan of Arjuna and the Kilan of Kamsa. Now, the act of killing is in itself is kind of, I mean, I never kill anybody, but it must feel horrible. Yeah, I mean, we walk around, we kill all kinds of living beings, but when you kill another human being, once I had an uncle who was in the Air Force, and he was stationed in Germany during the Cold War. And it so happened that when I was a kid, I liked airplanes, so I used to go to visit him, and he had all kinds of models. And then one time I asked him whether I knew he was a soldier, Air Force serviceman, and I asked him, did you ever kill somebody, anybody? And he paused and he said, yes, I did once only, but I regretted it. And he told me that he was stationed in Germany, and once they were patrolling around Czechoslovakia. And during the Cold War, as you may recall, there was a great tension between, you know, the Iron Curtain countries and the NATO countries. And so they were patrolling, and they got ambushed. There was no fire or anything, but he had to kill somebody with a bayonet. And so, even though he was a soldier, and he was allowed to kill, and he was, under those circumstances, he actually felt terrible for killing someone. It gets not easy. So the psychology of killing, I mean, Kant helps killing babies, and probably that's why he's getting these regrets in his conscience. He's saying, you know, this is horrible, this is not really me, but I mean, I'm a great king, how can I kill these babies? So we may misuse this knowledge to say that, you know, here I am, I'm engaged in Krishna consciousness, I'm in the Krishna consciousness movement, and even though I made mistakes, people have to put up with them because I'm fully surrendered. That's again another misuse of Krishna consciousness philosophy. Because the devotee really, the symptom of a devotee is that he doesn't put anyone in anxiety. Isn't it? I mean, look at Prabhupada. Prabhupada was very heavy oftentimes. But then he was very loving. So the loving part of Prabhupada's dealings overwhelmed his being strict with his disciples. So that's why disciples loved him. But when we abuse this thing and we start being too heavy on people, but not loving enough, that's when the abuse really happens. So, and also what we should understand from this whole story is that even though we are, to some extent, when we are not fully in Krishna consciousness, when we're not fully absorbing Krishna consciousness, we're going to make mistakes. But we should avoid making mistakes, especially towards other devotees. Because putting an anxiety in someone, you know, sometimes you do it even unconsciously. I mean, we do it. I do it sometimes. And we have to have the frame of mind in which we're going to apologize to other devotees when The other devotee expresses, you know, I think I've been wronged by you, you know. I didn't like what you did. And so why should they be able to apologize? Because that's part of growing up. That's part of maturing in Krishna consciousness. I mean, we see that all over the place. I mean, we see it in even in the Bhagavatam stories. The Bhagavatam stories are replete with this kind of dealings among the, or even Chaitanya Charitamrita. There's so many relationships from or pastimes from which we can understand how we should deal with other devotees and with other living entities, even with the non-devotees. Because sometimes we consider ourselves superior to the non-devotees, and in a sense we are. Brahmanas are, by definition, they are above in terms of social status. But that doesn't mean that the Brahmanas are going to abuse their status. Because that's exactly what happened before. Why did the Varnashram Dharma collapsed? It's because the Brahmanas got corrupted. It's a level of corruption to think that because I'm born a Brahman, because I'm initiated Brahman, now I can. I remember when I first joined ISKCON as a new bhakta, I felt pretty much abused for a little while by the Brahmins. But then, you know, now when I go back and I'm thinking, why didn't I stick around with these people? So, but then I realized that that we were all growing up. I mean, there were some Brahmins when I first joined who were younger than I was. But what does that mean? You know, it's 2 or 3 years younger than I was, and I was a bhakta, this, you know, 13-year-old kid. I was 17 when I joined. This 13-year-old kid was a Brahmin already, and he thought he could lord it over me and have to put up with it. So the idea is that in Krishna consciousness, we have to have this sincerity to apologize when we need to apologize. I mean, Kamsa is doing that. But of course, down the road, we're going to realize that he's changing his mind. But at least he's doing that. He's apologizing. And because he cannot find some other way to explain his regret, he quotes the scriptures, basically. But we should be careful not to imitate those things. Especially, I mean, nowadays, you're engaged in any kind of child abuse, you will be a jailbird in no time. Because even the non-devotees have this sense of discriminating between the things. Let alone using the scriptures to engage in such heinous activities. So that's what we should understand as it's a great story, actually. It's a great story, Prabhu. Prangavinda. Here, get the mic.
That in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, that you give nice class, Prabhu, thank you. That in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, that Srila Prabhupada expressed that six types of people can be killed. You remember? One
right.
Who attacks you with deadly weapon, one who kidnaps your wife. You know.
Set fire to your
So place. I trace that the commentary given by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that where Jagna Balka expressed this, that Artha Shastra, Vaishnava are the extractor of the essence of the Shastra, not the fascinated by the flowery language of the Shastra.
Right.
So Artha Shastra emphasized this, six types of people can be killed and there is no reaction. Mm-hmm. But then Dharma Shastra, which is leader of Artha Shastra, because Artha Shastra is a branch of Dharma Shastra, Dharma Shastra says, Mahinsa Sarva Bhutani, you should not cause pain to anyone. Mm-hmm. So according to those who are Dharma Shastra followers, they say, no, you cannot kill. But those who are following Artha Shastra, they say, you can kill six people, right. There is no sin. Then Jagnabalka explains that if you go follow Smriti Shastra, which is producing Dharma Shastra, Swayam Bhuva Manu wrote the Dharma Shastra from the Smriti, where it says that Atmabhat Rakshayati, you have to protect yourself to serve the Lord or any other purpose, you have to always protect. So therefore, it supersedes Dharma Shastra.
Mm-hmm.
But then Shruti comes above this, because Shruti is the origin of Smriti. Smriti cannot exist without Shruti.
Mm-hmm.
So Shruti says that, quoting this parallel to Svabhajana Kunte Nibaddha Sena Karmanad Kottam Nechusi Jan Mahat Karishyasi Avasopitat. So what Yudhishthira Maharaj regretting, Arjuna did not regret. Yudhishthira Maharaj actually did not regret. What he was regretting is inspiration by Krishna within his heart, mm-hmm. so that he could have Bhishma Dev deliver this message.
Mm-hmm.
But when we please Guru Krishna, this is our goal. Bhakti means pleasing Guru Krishna. There is no regret. And even at the cost of killing, Hanuman never regretted how he killed so many people in Lanka or Arjuna.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Now, in these cases that we are talking about, you know, those pastimes of Pandavas, it's interesting to note that at the end of the Battle of Kurukshetra, the Kurukshetra War, Yudhishthira was very regretful of having, because it, basically he thought himself responsible not only for killing so many soldiers, but also for the sociological impact that the lack of males in society was going to be, meaning, you know, women are all these men dead on the battlefield. They were, you know, husbands to someone, father to someone, brother to someone else. You know what I mean? So Yudhishthira felt this regret that here I am, I'm the emperor, I'm the main container on the Pandava side, and on the other side was Duryodhana, but we killed them all. So he was feeling this regret, and of course he is human to do that. So even though, like you were saying, we are acting under the shelter of Guru and Krishna, that doesn't mean we are automatons. That doesn't mean you're not a human being. That doesn't mean you don't have a mind. That doesn't mean you don't have a heart. What it means is that we take the shelter of Guru, we take the shelter of Krishna, and you are a contributor to your own advancement. It is not just Krishna. It is not just Guru. It's actually you too. I mean, we have the story of Chaitanya Charitamrita. Krishna controls everything. What Krishna does not control is your ability to love him, because that's your private thing. Only you decide, once you get all the facts, once you know everything about Krishna, once you know everything about the transcendental world, once you know everything about the material world, you still got a choice. As the Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Arjun, I have explained to you everything that's to be known, but now do as you wish. I'm not interfering in there, because that is you. And so our humanity should play a role, a purified humanity should play a role in our own advancement in Krishna consciousness. So even though, like you were quoting, Hanuman was killing left and right, Bhima was killing left and right, I mean, these people were powerful kshatriyas. Of course, they had the big picture. But when we apply these activities to our own lives today, we should be cautious not to imitate neither the pure devotees, not to imitate demons like this one. So that's really the... In other words, we have to be very introspective about these things. This is... Krishna consciousness is actually that's something that's going to liberate you. And therefore you really have to understand it, and that really requires a lot of introspection. And that introspection comes from the help we get from Krishna himself, the help we get from gurus, from the Vaishnavas, from the Shastra, but also from you. How do you take this? You know, that personal contribution that we got to do to our own advancement. And that is why we should not be mechanically applying this knowledge, or just saying, well, this is what happened, that's what it's going to be. No, it's not black and white. It's never black and white. Life is not black and white. Let alone spiritual life is not black and white. Anyway, I think we're going to stop here. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.